This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, June 27th, 2012. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, Lost Light and Blind Eyes. At the time of William Matthews' death in 1997, he was one of the most celebrated American poets. Nowadays, he's far from obscure, but he doesn't get the attention he used to for his quiet, well-turned phrases, wise sayings, and rich metaphors. However, David Yezzie is a William Matthews fan, and he's here to listen with us to a few of his poems. David Yezzie is a poet who is frequently published in Poetry Magazine, and he's the executive editor of the literary journal The New Criterion. David, for listeners who aren't familiar with William Matthews, give us a thumbnail sketch of the man and his poetry.
Well, he was born in Ohio. He was raised in Cincinnati and taught in various universities. He was at one time head of the Associated Writing Programs.
So he's very much a man of his generation who did what poets did. He went into the universities. He wrote on the side.
He was, and he was really, I think he was really a leading figure in his generation and was president of the Poetry Society of America for a while. But as you say, since his death at a young age in his 50s, not as much, I think, on the radar, just as I think happens when poets kind of disappear from the magazines and the books kind of stop appearing.
Mm-hmm. Now, you wanted to quote something that he had written about poetry, and I wanted you to lead us through that a little bit.
You know, one of the things that is very striking about William Matthews immediately in his poems, and I think in person too, is that he had a wonderful, warm, wry sense of humor. And one of the things that caught my eye when I was reading through a collection of his prose called Curiosities in 1989 is, kind of like Auden, he liked to make lists, and this is one of the of my favorite lists of his, in which he basically defines the four most common forms of lyric poetry as follows. One, I went out into the woods today, and it made me feel, you know, sort of religious. Two, we're not getting any younger.
That's true.
Three, it sure is cold and lonely. A, without you, honey, or B, with you, honey. And four, sadness seems but the other side of the coin of happiness, and vice versa. And in any case, the coin is too soon spent, and on we know not what.
So that's all true.
I mean, it's right.
That's about 90% of the poems ever written.
Yeah. What I think part of his genius was that he was very clear-eyed about the forms that lyric poetry traditionally took. And he himself was very careful to mix it up and to try new things and was always bringing a lot of energy, not just in terms of his subjects, which included jazz and sports, basketball, things like that, but also trying kinds of ways into the lyric that were surprising. So he always had a lot of energy, which was tremendous.
Well, let's hear one of his poems. I asked you to choose some from our site, poetryfoundation.org. And this one we actually have a recording of. It's called Eyes. And first, here's how Matthews introduced it at the Library of Congress in 1979.
The title is strange. It's just the word eyes, E-Y-E-S, with a colon after it, as if the poem were a sort of definition or a rumination anyway.
It starts with the troubled eyes of James Thurber, the New Yorker writer and cartoonist who grew blind over the course of his long career. Anything else that we absolutely should know before we hear it?
Well, the only other thing that may be an unfamiliar word, phosphenes, it's the illusion of light in the mind created not by light actually entering the eye, but just by the firing of the nerves and so on.
Okay, good to know. Let's hear the poem.
Eyes. The only parts of the body the same size at birth as they'll always be. That's why all babies are beautiful. Thurber used to say, as he grew blind. Not dark, he'd go on to explain, but floating in a pale light always, a kind of candle-lit murk from a sourceless light. He needed dark to see. For a while he drew on black paper with white pastel chalk, but it grew worse. Light bored into his eyes, but where did it go? Into a sea of phosphenes, along the wet fuse of some dead nerve. It hid everywhere and couldn't be found. I've used up three guesses, all of them right. It's like scuba diving, going down into the black cone tip that dives farther than I can, though I dive closer all the time.
David, the poem begins with a fact.
Eyes. The only parts of the body the same size at birth as they'll always be.
Or what appears to be a fact.
Apparent fact. Yeah, that's
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if this would pass the New Yorker fact checkers.
I think they would have questions about it. No, I mean, he basically is picking up on what has, I think, been kind of popularly thought, that you're born with eyes at full size.
Yeah.
But I think technically maybe a little bit stretching it.
Well, he can get away with
it. But no, and I think so. And he kind of sets the thing off on just the right foot. And I think that that seems to be an undertow in the poem, is that not only is it about the loss of eyesight and kind of diving into this murk, which has a larger resonance, but also really about the way that that goes hand in hand with aging. And that seems right to start with the fact that the baby's eyes are the same as the adult's eyes. And because it sets infancy up as the beginning, and then we kind of go down this long descent.
And to get to that descent, we first have to pass through James Thurber.
That's it. Right, yeah. Right.
That's why all babies are beautiful, Thurber used to say as he grew blind. Not dark, he'd go on to explain, but floating in a pale light always, a kind of candle-lit murk from a sourceless light. He needed dark to see. For a while he drew on black paper with white pastel chalk.
The key line in the poem to me seems to be, he needed dark to see. The poem means it literally. Thurber needed the dark paper to see the chalk marks that he made. Yeah. But there's a metaphorical implication here. Can you draw that out a little bit?
This, I think, is a lot of the poem's real power, is that it gets a little mysterious as it moves along. And that is a kind of unexpected idea. The darker it gets, the more the possibility of insight is there.
It's like scuba diving, going down into the black cone tip that dives farther than I can, though I dive closer all the time.
He goes from Thurber's eyes to scuba diving. He makes a very quick transition between the two. So in effect, we are invited to scuba dive in James Thurber's eyes, or imagine going into that. Very odd.
Right, really odd. And I think that that was one of the things that he was so brilliant at, was that he could make these quick, energetic leaps that didn't leave the reader behind, but really kind of put you on your toes a little bit to kind of say, well, where are we going? What's going on with this? That's always a lot of fun to follow him.
Yeah. So another poem you chose is called Men at My Father's Funeral. And we don't have a recording of Matthews reading it, so you'll have to do the honors here. But before you do, is there anything we should know about this one that would help us take it in?
The occasion for this poem is his father's funeral, and he's just spoken about his father publicly, and people are coming up to him after the funeral, and he's really watching their bodies, which seem to be telling the whole story.
Let's hear it.
Sure.
This is Men at My Father's Funeral by William Matthews.
The ones his age who shook my hand on their way out sent fear along my arm like heroin. These weren't men mute about their feelings, or what's a body language for. And I, the glib one, who stood with my back to my father's body and praised the heart that attacked him, I'd made my stab at elegy, the flesh-made word. The very spit in my mouth was sour with ruth and eloquence. What could be worse? Silence, the anthem of my father's new country. And thus this babble, like a dial tone from our bodies.
David, the first sentence of this poem is really odd. The ones his age who shook my hand on their way out sent fear along my arm like heroin. I've never done heroin. I've never shot it up, but it's known to bring pleasure and maybe a release from fear.
Hmm.
What is Matthews just trying to shock us here? What do you make of that?
Well, what he seems to be setting up as an opposition is how the emotions are conveyed through the body as opposed to how they're conveyed through words.
Hmm.
And it seems to me that he's feeling, as you can imagine, kind of self-conscious and a little self-critical.
Yeah, he's the glib one. Yeah.
Stood with my back to my father's body, praised the heart that attacked him. You know, he took a stab, he tried his best, but I think what he's really feeling in this moment, now surrounded by these men of his father's generation, is just how his words were inadequate and even kind of misplaced or inappropriate somehow.
Show off,
missed the mark, you know, that they were just out of register emotionally.
Mm.
And that the real emotion, the appropriate emotion, is just all of these, you know, these anxious bodies doing this dance of anxiety and loss and sadness around each other, as you do at a funeral. When these men of his father's generation shake his hand, part of what's being communicated almost like an electricity through that handshake, almost like a drug kind of entering the bloodstream, is not only the sadness that they feel at the loss of their friend, but I think an awareness of their own mortality that just shocks him, you know, yeah.
But he doesn't leave it there. He doesn't say that he made a fool of himself or what he said was completely nonsense. He takes it somewhere else and he says, "The very spit in my mouth was sour with ruth and eloquence." I had to look up ruth. Everybody knows what ruthless is, but ruth is the ability to have compassion for other people's suffering.
Yeah.
And then he goes on, what could be worse? Silence, the anthem. Silence could be worse.
Right.
Silence could be worse. Even though he's made what he considers an idiot of himself, it's much worse to say nothing.
Well, that's it. And this is especially because that silence, that is the anthem of death.
You know, yeah, that's a great line. I mean,
yeah, beautiful, yeah. Right? Yeah. Putting it right toward the end of the poem like that and basically saying, this is what we're all in some way reacting against. Me with my words, these men with their gestures, that the babble of their bodies is somehow making sure that this creeping silence doesn't take over.
David Yezzi, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You can find poems and readings by both William Matthews and David Yezzi on our website, poetryfoundation.org. David Yezzi's latest book of poems is called Azores, and it's published by Swallow Press. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.